Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Power Spike. It's Deegan, Dom, and Monty to break down all the lighter action from a Lunar New Year celebrating week of... Lol, esports just punched my microphone. How's it going, guys? How was your week easier here, Dom?
It was pretty good. I mean, I still did LEC and LCS, but yeah, no LPL was... I mean, it's all right. It's like, it's an easier week, but then it's also just the best region is not on. So kind of sucks in that regard, like, because I have to just watch LEC and pretend that it's okay right now, which it's not. So we'll get to that in a bit.
Monty, how about you? Did you get some sleep, have more time to spend with the new one?
No, because, well, sort of a little bit. I mean, getting more sleep. No, spending more time with kids. Yes, because, of course, school was off for the Lunar New Year here in Asia. So, yes, in fact, I did get more time with my family.
It's time for sleep, and instead the kid just breaks on in to the baby.
It's
also
okay.
Sleeping.
It's okay. It was a good time. Lunar New Year's over now. Back in school. Everything's open again. So, yeah, it's been fun. It's been fun. But no, the sleeping hasn't really changed.
Our first thing that we're going to dive into is something that's a little evil and villainous. But before we get to that, you know who's evil and villainous? Our viewers. Because last week I asked some pretty good call to actions in terms of, hey, do you think KC should have, you know, what do you think they should have done in the coaching position? What do you think about Cloud9 and blah, blah, blah. And all anyone ever said was, we want Carrot Deegan. So that is why I'm wearing an orange shirt today. So orange shirt,
more,
green hair.
You're like strawberry Deegan, right?
This
now.
Is orange. This is that the is, orange that is, thing that I have.
That does not look orange to me.
Well,
I was gonna say you look like strawberry Deegan. He's a Broncos fan, doesn't own any orange. Okay, Deegan.
I had to pack it away, Monty. I'm in the middle of packing. So I had to move it. Hang on. Let me see. All right. Anyways, but while I try to fix my camera to get this correct, we just wanted to call a quick shout out to what did we call them on Facebook, Dom? The little scholars or the good scholars, evil geniuses, with their new rebrand, in case you didn't see it. Established in 1999. Welcome to our villain era. For their Valorant team, they put this shit out and they keep leaning into being villains. And I get it if it's a brand thing. It's not okay when your organization is just a dumpster fire and has done some really fucked up shit.
I think that's perfect. That's perfect branding. They're going to be the most they're going to just. I hope that they go full evil. Like they stop paying players. They abuse people in the workplace. Like they commit tax fraud. Like I just hope they go the full fucking villain era. If they're gonna brand themselves like that, they need to at least embrace it.
I mean, they may have done some of these things already. Like the number of scandals that has been pouring forth from evil geniuses. I mean, you know what's funny though is that they actually tried to get rid of their Valorant partnership and Riot wouldn't let them because FlyQuest wanted to come in and actually take over the Valorant partnership position, but Riot doesn't allow the sale of those partnership slots, which makes sense. Like they don't want, you know, it's not the same thing as a franchise fee that you paid for. It is a slot that you earn or that you are given, and then Riot gives you revenue. So they didn't want that to be up for sale, which I understand. But at the same time, there was a chance to kind of get rid of EG here. I think they were hoping that EG would just kind of quietly leave and they would have a promotion slot. And no, EG is now just sitting on top of the VCT Americas like a leech, sucking the blood out of it while being completely useless to the league, cutting down to the bare minimum, holding their Valorant roster contract in contract jail for a while. And what I think is so funny about this villain era arc is we already had the EG villain era historically. Remember when they had Huck and Idra? We had that. That's what made the team fun. That was the fun villain era. This is the shocking abusive players villain era. And I don't know who thought this was a good idea to like lean into this at this point in time or how it's different from their previous branding, which they were doing with the whole Live Evil thing after they got acquired by those Peak Six shitlords. But it is pathetic, you know, to say the least. And certainly I don't really understand how they think that this is going to bring them fans, because the only thing it does is call attention to all of the bullshit they've inflicted on the scene in the last 2 years.
Yeah. It's just very surprising that I don't know. I maybe you don't have to run it by Riot, but now Riot's just going to be like, what the fuck are you guys doing here? It's not only the Americas. It's the whole Valorant esports ecosystem, because they're the reigning world champions and you can't get rid of them.
That reminded me, what happened to GamerDoc? Speaking of evil geniuses.
Goodbye. Yeah, goodbye. Laid off with everybody else. Yep.
Why is she privated on Twitter? I just went to her Twitter and it's privated.
So I think, did you see Thorin's GamerDoc video?
Yeah, it was a banger. It was like, so that's why I want to see like what she's up to, you know, like is she still like in the space, she doctoring up some people? No,
I think GamerDoc is done doctoring up the people in esports mercifully. Okay. You know.
All right,
I'm gonna try to, I mean, if I ever make it back to a broadcast, Dom, I'm gonna throw that one in there. They're doctoring up some a play here.
Yep. No, I mean, I just want to see who actually gets the credit for all the good decisions that EG makes now, because I mean, they can't give the credit to GamerDoc
Potter.
They can't give the credit to Nicole LaPointe Jameson. So like, who gets the credit now?
I hope it's Potter, because Potter actually is is the person who deserves credit.
Yep.
So she was the one who.
I mean, she's not the Warren Buffett of esports. So how much credit can you really give her?
Like, I mean, she turned a team around as a coach that looked unlikely to do anything and then won the equivalent of Valorant World. So I think that was pretty impressive.
I mean, nothing. It pales in comparison to what Warren Buffett has done. So.
Yeah, really, the Sean Connery of esports, retiring from esports before her time, you know, leaving again gracefully.
That is the frustrating part about a lot of this EG shit and a lot of the stuff you see in like the esports swamp. It's not the people on the ground that are generally the ones that made these decisions. They're the ones that are in you know, that are left with the mess. And from what I can imagine, Potter is running a team. She's in control. She's able to have, you know, competitive control over everything, and so that's the spot for her. You can't really go anywhere else. They won't sell the organization, and that's that. So best of luck to the EG players and coaches for their Valorant stuff. I just don't know what this branding is. I just no idea what this thing is. Just let it die.
The thing that confuses me about Potter is that she's like okay with promoting the team in this way. You know what I mean? Like, she should just say no, in my opinion.
I guess you could say no, and it's tough, right? Because you did win with this team under this org who treated them right. Well, I don't know if they, you know,
can still
like,
work for EG. Well, don't get me wrong.
You just dollar team, right? Like, at a point, you know, after they won, they no longer treated them right, but.
Yeah. So I think I just wouldn't have gone along with their marketing push here about the villain era. I think that's where you draw the line. You're like, I will coach this team. I will do interviews. I am not going to be the face of your villain era, which also, if you know, Christine is like ludicrous because she is not that person.
Yep. Okay. All right. Well, anyways, best of luck with EG and good riddance. Let's move on to our first segment of the week, the lighter week, but it's probably, you know, maybe this conversation started at Worlds last year, guys. Maybe when NRG put G2 in the dumpster in Korea. But now I think, given the fact that LCS has looked pretty good, LEC made those big changes last year to their format and their league, the teams, we've talked about the nationality in terms of fandom. We've got a real conversation in our keeper kick. It's the LCS or LEC. So let's get into it. All right, guys, that's the question here. Keeper kick, LCS or LEC? We could start with the positive and negatives. And to be fair to both, there has been some great positives and there have been some glaring negatives. And I think, though, that all of us can agree the LCS product has been better this year than it has in many of the years past, whether you want to tackle the I guess lesser teams means there's a little bit more impact there, the quality of gameplay, the closeness of gameplay. There's a lot here to unpack compared to the LEC, who I think over the last several years has been leading the way in terms of the West. Neither one of you.
I mean, I'll go. Look, I think this is an interesting question because the bottom of the LEC right now is just unwatchably bad. Like if we're talking about the disappointments that teams like Rogue offer for viewers, and yes, they are making some changes, like obviously Finn coming in. Not sure that's going to do the most in order to help Rogue, but at least they're trying to make some fixes, right? We have had a spectacular failure in Carmine Corp to talk about, and Carmine Corp has been entertaining because of the way in which they've been losing and the conversation that's been surrounding that team combined with the fandom. And on the other side, we have G2, which I think is undoubtedly the best Western team right now and is super strong. So LEC is very top heavy at the moment, but I think if you look at the overall quality of LCS and the entertainment factor of LCS, it's not just the production, Deagon. It's just that all of the games have been more entertaining than all of the games in LEC, if that makes sense, right? Like the average game entertainment value is just higher in LCS, partially because they have fewer teams and a higher concentration of talent, but also because bottom teams like Shopify Rebellion, first off, are just entertaining with their style.
Yep.
And second off, are actually beating the top teams in the league. Like they're blue shelling everybody right now. And sure, part of this is like C9 has really underperformed relative to expectations. There's a world where C9 and FlyQuest are just dumpstering everybody in this league and it's a lot less interesting. But the parity has made it interesting. However, at the top end, I still think you're not seeing the same skill level as the top end of the teams in Europe right now.
Who's the top end besides for G2?
I mean, they're clearly head and shoulders above everybody else.
And that's my problem. I mean, I don't think BDS is like my whole point that I've been making for like weeks now is that BDS is not actually a good team. Like they're good in the context of LEC because no one can carry a lead. No one is able to just like win an early game and actually just like stack Drakes and actually just have the base level setups to be able to leverage their gold advantage. Teams can't do that right now in the LEC, but they're not actually a good team. Like if you put them in an international tournament in this current form versus top teams around the world, even the teams that people are like, ooh, this team is kind of shaky. Like, are you telling me that LNG would not just completely fucking body this team? Like a sixth place team from China? Like literally, like KDF, I think would beat this team. Like the problem with this team is they're like, they have no game plan when they start the game. They have really good like setups around Drakes. Like they know like, okay, everyone like base a minute before, get your pink wards, drop them here, look for a pick on this guy when he walks in. Like they're really good at that type of stuff. But you just don't get to that point of the game and do that when you don't have a lead, generally speaking. And this series versus G2, they actually were able to get like some leads, but then their macro fell apart completely. I mean, they just were getting completely out macroed by G2. So I think the problem that I have with LEC is like the like second, third, fourth, like Mad Lions, Fnatic, BDS. I feel like Fnatic is kind of underperforming, like specifically Oscar is playing pretty poorly right now. And that's why they're kind of in that second to fourth like grouping where they haven't solidified themselves as like a second place team. When I'm looking at these teams, I mean, there are massive flaws that these teams have. I think like we saw Adam try to play meta champions for this best of five, and you see why he doesn't play meta champions. Like, for best of fives, it's like, yeah, just go back to Garen and Darius. Like, I don't want to ever see you play Jax ever again for the rest of my life. Like, please never play Jax again unless Divine Sunder magically gets put back into the game and you can just hit one item and beat the shit out of somebody else.
You didn't like the perma losing Cassante matchup that we have now this year and then just getting solo kill constantly? I thought it was pretty entertaining.
Yeah, for some reason I just wasn't feeling it. I think it's just I just have bias against Adam, to be honest. That's probably why I evaluate his performance as like been pretty bad versus versus BB in this best of five. But I think LEC has been, it's just been like not that fun to watch, because it feels like pretty much you can see this. Look at every single content creator around the league and how free they were with their opinions previously, and how now people refuse to talk bad about like K-Corp, Mad Lions. People are just afraid of fan bases. You can see it in the content creators. People are so like afraid to say the wrong thing and just get abused by a fucking fan base. And I think it's just made the league, like, it's just made the discussions around the league so much less interesting, because it's like, oh, no one's going to talk shit about Mad Lions. No one's going to talk shit about K-Corp. Like, people are just going to just pussyfoot around the big fan bases, really? And try to, like,
I think make there was sure a lot, like, of criticism about them getting rid of Yamato.
Yeah, but I mean, that's like a popular opinion. Like,
that,
yeah, like,
that, that one's safe. The fans, yeah, themselves were upset about that. Some of them were upset about it.
Yeah, and it's, but it's like the way that people like phrase it, you know, it's like no one's going after like the organization. Everyone's like, oh, I liked Yamato as a coach. Like, no one's willing to like call out Kometo. Like, when was the last time you saw like a big content creator like call out Kometo and be like, like, this is a fucking stupid ass decision. Like, what you're saying on stream is unacceptable. Like, no, people are just afraid of these fan bases. It's so fucking obvious.
I mean, I just, I hear this shit on LFN.
Talent is afraid.
So.
Like, everyone is fucking,
I mean,
afraid.
Kometo is hilarious because he, I mean, I'm just going to put, I'll criticize Kometo right now. I think that this is incredibly stupid that he just comes in and he comes back to LEC Deegan's hiding. This is Deegan's opinion, by the way, that he told me in private. These are not my thoughts, guys. These are Deegan's thoughts. Deegan said that when Kometo was talking publicly about how he had to come in and like fix the team because it was going so wrong. Kometo, you are a fucking streamer. You have no idea what is good or not in a professional League of Legends team. You are the last person who should be walking into a room and diagnosing the problems in teamwork or in coaching. All right. You get that? You are the one who made this team. And then you, through your own feelings, decided that you should run with certain players in a professional league that apparently are just unbenchable because you have weird ass loyalty to them. This is not a content creation group that you're dealing with. It is a professional fucking sports team. And literally ask yourself this question. Does PSG feel weird loyalty to players? No, they want to fucking win and they change out the players that are performing badly. So how about you nut up and do that instead of firing the coach that was actually effective and thinking that you have some deep insider knowledge about how esports team are run? Because you don't. You're at the bottom of the fucking league.
Woo!
That's what Deegan told. That's what Deegan told.
Yeah, that's what Deegan said. And he said he hates France. He says he doesn't like French people. He thinks they smell. Like, I don't know why he keeps on saying this type of stuff.
I can't tell you guys anything anymore. What the fuck? You know, when I think about owners that kind of step in like that, obviously Reggie comes to the top. Another one is Nadeshot as well, early on with this 100 Thieves kind of reign. And I think, you know, with Reggie, he put the time into it, right? He was in the league. He was one of the leading faces of League of Legends in North America at the time. So I think there's a lot more credibility that goes into that. Same thing with Nadeshot, with the multiple championships of building 100 Thieves out of nothing. And then pretty quickly...
Are we crediting Nadeshot over Papa Smithy with that?
Wait. And I was going to say, pretty quickly, then Nadeshot got out of the way. He got out of the way.
Yes.
And that is like a very important learning lesson, I think, that you have as you not only get older, but have a more senior management role. You're in a management role, but like not even like team management, like organizational management. Your job is to hire and empower and I guess support the right people. That's your job. So I don't disagree with Monty's points. That actually came from me.
Yeah. Also, I just have to put this out there, but you know, part of when good coaches evaluate, this happens in sports, when good coaches evaluate teams, the reason why in the NFL you do not see many in-season coach firings is because it makes it very unattractive as a destination for a good coach to go if they know they're not going to get a fair shake at a full season. Like, you really have to fuck up in order for that to occur. And so for them to fire Yamato after 9 games with a roster that wasn't really fully under his control from the get-go, I think is ludicrous that you think you're, I mean, you promote your assistant coach, great, but are you going to get another big coach signing? Like, feels difficult, right? Yeah. Who wants to work in this environment?
Luckily, you don't need to get a big coach. You just need to get French coach. So that's
but even
that's
the French aren't safe. You know, let me just put it this way. In the history of France, French on French violence is very, very popular. You know, look at the revolution, man. That shit was bloody as fuck. They don't care about going after their own historically.
Oh, God. I was too slow. There was a Les Mis joke there somewhere. But
yeah, to answer your question, Dagon, I'm keeping LCS. I just feel like LCS has just been more fun. Like, I just enjoy doing LCS more than LEC. Like, I've been somebody who is pretty much at every other point besides for right now, I had enjoyed LEC maybe like the most. It was one of my favorite regions to cover, but I feel like this new, like the new fandom has just made the experience so fucking cringe to see the way that people talk. It's like the fans also, because it's a lot of like new, like ultras and stuff like that. A lot of the fans are not even like huge League of Legends fans where they have like a ton of game knowledge. It's kind of like, my team won, fuck you, like kill yourself. Like, it's like, oh, okay, bro. Like, I'm just so bored of these discussions that we're having in the community right now. So I think like the ultra nationalism has kind of just made it boring to me. Because it feels like the discussions have just become worse and worse. I think the quality of the games, like it's a league, and this has generally been my biggest criticism of LCK, is I generally don't like leagues where there is like a huge difference between the top and the bottom. Obviously, LPL is kind of an exception because there's so many teams. Yeah. There's so many teams that it's like, yeah, the 17th team in the first place, there's going to be a huge disparity. But like the 10th to the first is a lot closer and you get a lot of close matches. I mean, it feels like a lot of the time when you're watching LEC, you're just like, wow, this team is just inting. Like, and you notice it a lot of times people are not really complimenting the team that's winning. It's like the team that's losing is making such egregious errors that it feels hard to even like give the other team props. It's like, man, like Hilly ran it down so fucking hard in that Vitality versus Mad Lion series. It's hard to not just talk about the fucking it. Like, it was crazy. Like, when do you see somebody die 11 times in like 30 minutes?
Dracos like, did a very good job. He did a very good job of keeping it like broadcast safe.
I don't understand, man. I think you have to go after these players more in the broadcast, right? Like, I think that's my problem with LEC. One of my problems with LEC right now is the way that the veterans who are underperforming are being treated by the casters. Like, there has to be more
Achilles
criticism.
Inting again. Ha ha. Look at him. Look at how funny. It's like he's running it down on purpose, bro. He's trying to lose the game. It's so disgusting the things that he's doing.
I think part of the disappointment with the LEC is not just the quality of the games. It's that legends of the scene are performing really badly. Like, if you look at Heretic's game, you know, by the end, guys, it wasn't even just Perks. It was like Jankos, who was really good last year. Like,
Wonder had a bad the last two games. Like, he was getting solo killed in the Gnar. The Gnar Malphite matchup as Gnar, he's getting solo killed Priest 6. It's like, please make it stop.
That was funny though. But I mean, like Wonder and Jankos now seem to have like caught the whatever disease Perks has that is causing this lack of performance. But because it's sad. Like, this is what I'm saying, is it's sad to watch Perks, Jankos, and Wonder, Hillisang, these guys who are among the best players to play in LEC ever. I mean, Jankos is straight up the best player ever at his position. Like, that's not even a question. To be having these kind of performances. And so I think the depression of LEC is this. It's you know, what Dom said, like, the nationalism, while it's generating viewership, makes honest conversations about teams very hard, particularly like Carbine Corp's one thing, but they lost.
I stream my fucking viewer count off. Like, I don't even give a fuck about the viewership. Like I'm not trying to have the most viewership ever if like the viewership is just going to be like horrible, you know? And that's something I guess is different than I guess how most people see it. I think a lot of people just see it as like the numbers are bigger. So it's like a better experience. It's like, fuck. Like, I mean, I don't know if I'm in the minority when I say this, but like, I enjoy having a lower amount of viewers. Like, I enjoy talking to my chat when it's like 3 to 4K viewers, as opposed to when it's like 10 to 12 and it's just spam and like fucking emotes and all this bullshit. Like, I just don't enjoy the experience of just you know, like just dealing with like the mass and just being like a fucking like trained monkey and being like, this guy's anting, what the fuck, man? Like big overreactions, like that shit just triggers the fuck out of me. Like I hate even trying to be that person, which is why I've always done LPL. People are like, why do you wake up at 3 a.m. for LPL? It's the least viewership I get by far, right? Like I normally get, I mean, there's games that I watch with only like 2K viewers compared to like when I do LCS or LEC where it's like generally like 5K plus. The reason why I like doing LPL is because I feel like that is literally like the best quality streams that I have generally. Those are the ones where like I can communicate with fans and people can ask questions. And I feel like just in general, the people that are asking the questions are more like diehard League fans than, you know, like LCS is kind of like, this guy sucks, Keck W. Like that's pretty much the fucking, that's the highlight of the, that's like the most profound thing anyone says in the chat. So I just don't think that like there being more viewers just makes the experience better. For me, it makes the experience worse. It's just like the level of the conversation is lower. And I just think that, like, it just, it's like you have to be dishonest in a way. It feels like a lot of people are, it's like lying by omission. Like they just choose to glance over like a lot of the ints or like preface them in like a nice way to make it seem like less extreme. I don't know. I just feel like the whole vibe of it is really off. It's just something about it is just weird to me.
Yeah. And like, I think when it comes to the fan bases, it's good for the viewership on some of the language co-streams, but you know, the experience, especially like Mad Lions, because it's very hard to have an honest conversation about Mad Lions in particular right now, because objectively, this is a downgraded roster. Like there's not another way to look at this.
That's so like they the can hardest thing. Like you, I've tried this for so long, Monty, just give it up.
I know.
Like literally just give it up at this point.
What do you mean? Exactly. The four rookies are finding success with the one veteran. It's the whole Spanish roster plus Friscawi, who's basically Spanish now. You don't like that story, guys? Like,
look, I actually have a lot of nice things to say about this iteration of Mad Lions. But at the same time, it always has to be in the light that this roster is worse than the last roster. Like, they're not going to go to MSI, guys. Like, that's not a thing that's going to happen. You know what I mean?
The team won a championship last year. They were the only team outside of G2 that won a championship last year. And people are like, oh, but it's like a budget roster. It's like, from what it seems, from what the players say, what the org says, it doesn't seem like the money was the issue. It seems like they
Mad
just
Lions
had
was not an expensive
issues.
Roster last year. Mad Lions was not one of the more expensive rosters last year, guys. Like it wasn't. They haven't been an org that's been forking out the most money compared to G2 or Vitality last year, right? XL last year. Sure. You know, this is a team that probably was in the mid tier in terms of spending, but their spending compared to their results, like they got much better results per dollar spent or per euro spent, whatever you want to say, compared to many of the other teams in the LEC. But it's like, it's just impossible to have this conversation because you can compliment the current iteration of Mad Lions, but it always has to be couched in the fact that objectively this was the wrong move for the team if we're thinking about performance only. And there's no way to hide that. Like, if they can win a title, God bless. I hope they can prove me wrong. Seems really unlikely with this lineup, unless they make changes.
There's another thing that I think is lost on people, which is like, people are like, oh man, like look at this lineup. It came in and look at how strong it is already with all these rookies. This shows that like in the future, the team is going to be better, but they actually have an advantage over the other teams because they kept the majority of a lineup, even though it was an ERL lineup, they kept the majority of those players plus the coach, plus Elioya was somebody who had worked with Melzet previously. So it's like, they actually should have better coordination than other teams. The problem that I see with Mad Lions is I don't think player for player, they're going to be able to match up with the top teams when the top teams get that basic level of macro. It just doesn't seem like they're going to be able to win. Like, I can't see Friscawi winning a best of five versus Caps. Can't do it. I can't see him winning a best of five versus Humanoid either. I mean, I guess we'll see that. Look, if Oscar runs it as hard as he ran it, you know, then versus maybe. SK, then it's possible. Then it's possible. Like, they can win. But in general, I just don't think that, like, player for player, they're going to be able to match up with top teams. And I don't think that they will. They have that high of a ceiling because you have to also consider like what metas we can end up in. Like this is a meta that I think would like theoretically should suit having a weaker mid laner. But what happens if we end up in a meta where it's like the standard meta that we get, where it's like, you know, you have mages that require more skill, like in the meta. Like, let's say we end up with Syndra and that type of stuff, and then we end up with the tank top meta where the tanks are just fucking broken and you can no longer play all of Merwin's counter picks. Like, are they then going to be able to beat top teams? I think that the answer is like no.
I also think there's a question about if you move into a farming jungler meta with El Yoya, because a lot of their success is based around El Yoya's activity on the map in the early game and winning skirmishes. So, right, like El Yoya, first off, I want to say El Yoya has been fucking great, I think, this split. I think he's been really good, and his shot calling in the early game and the way that they coordinate and play around him and his pressure is one of their best qualities in my mind. But if you have, if you are not able to make as many active plays with the jungle pool, then the question is, does that change for this team at all?
And for our friends that are out there, I guess mis amigos that are hate watching right now, because we're just shitting on this team that last week we literally called out a couple of their players as the surprising rookie of the year candidates, that this team has made it to playoffs with a full rookie roster. Like, there's if you're still watching that and you're being like, now how are they saying all these mean things about our team and that they're shit and they're not going to be as good and they're going to get caught up? This is what we need to do. We're calling out that the league is weaker, that this team is strong to start out, and that, as Monty said, if they do win, that's the payoff. But right now, this is a G2 league. A G2 league with a weaker everyone else.
It is a one-team region. It is like the definition of a one-team region. It's to the point where we got to start having that conversation that they always did with Cloud9 in North America, which is like, how can G2 improve when everyone else sucks so bad? Like, doesn't it just hurt G2 that these are the players that they actually have to play against every single fucking week? Like, that is the conversation we're going to start having, because the G2 BDS series did not feel close. Like, it didn't feel like there was... It felt like if there was... I mean, what Treat said was that if there was a best of 19 played, G2 would win 10-0. Which is that's how it felt. Like, it just felt like you literally... It's like, how could BDS win? Even when they won early game, they couldn't win. They're completely out macroed. When they lost early game, they got completely fucking stomped. It's like, what could have happened for BDS to win the series? They looked so outclassed by the third game.
Right. And we'll talk like more specifically about G2's strengths and where they rank up in a little bit. But I think right now, to go back to the question, like these are the reasons. So, you know, LEC, it's been hard, I think, to have productive conversations. Like, even saying like Mad Lions is better than expected, but still worse than last year, is somehow fucking controversial. Like, I don't even understand how that could possibly be a controversial statement, but apparently people get angry. The bottom of the league is just like really shit, honestly, and it's a one-team league.
Oh, I mean, so Rogue is horrible to watch. Like, there's some teams that was always the problem with LCS, was that there would always be like Immortals or Dignitas, one of
Immortals
these teams
and Dig. Oh,
at the bottom,
Blue
that
and
just,
Ika.
Blue, Ika. Like, there was just some unwatchable fucking teams like in the bottom of LCS. And you have that right now in LEC. Like, Rogue was my least favorite team to watch in the entire world. Okay. In the entire world. Like, I watch the 17th place team in LPL. The 17th place team in LPL, which is probably going to end up being Thundertalk Gaming at this point, is significantly more fucking entertaining than watching Rogue. Like, Rogue is such a fucking eyesore, because not only do they suck, they also don't do anything. So they play these long, boring games where they don't do anything and fucking lose. And it's like, why do we have to fucking watch them for 9 games? Like, it's so hard to watch a team like that. So, man, like, them, Giant X was like that. K-Corp was really hard to watch. I mean, there's so many teams. Like, Heretics just makes me angry. Like Heretics makes me angry. There's, like, the teams that suck, that are so boring that I just, like, want to kill myself watching them in-game. Like, Rogue and Giant X and K-Corp. In-game. And then there's the tier of teams that just make me so fucking angry that I want to do that to somebody else in-game in my fucking house. But I live alone, so, you know, I'll probably end up having to take it out of myself again. So we got Heretics and Vitality, which is that next tier where they just make you so angry watching them play, because they just die for no reason. Like, you look at Vitality, it's like, why does Hilly in so much? Why can't Perks, like, win a fucking lane anymore? Why can't he lay? Like, just the decisions that are made just make no sense. It's so hard to watch these teams play, man. So that's literally half the league. So then we get to, like, the watchable teams. Fnatic, Mad Lions, SK, I guess, like, kind of brought it back this week. BDS and G2, and there's just not enough interaction over the season with those five teams to make me not hate the majority of the games I watch.
Let's talk about LCS a little bit too, because I think one of the reasons why LCS is more exciting to watch is because there are some, I think, genuinely exciting rookie players. Like Sniper and Masu are players that are mechanically very good and like seem like they have a future, right? And even if 100 Thieves, like it is, I'm just put this out there. It is embarrassing that 100 Thieves is in second place in this league right now because they fucking suck at late game macro. Like they are abominably bad. They won both of their matches this last week because both Liquid and C9 decided to use a bunch of crucial ults and team fights in the mid lane and then fight anyway and lose and just lose the game off those fights by like doing the NA ram, which was baffling in and of itself. But I like watching Sniper play. Like I actually like watching the whole top half of 100 Thieves play, but 100 Thieves bot lane is atrocious, like super bad. And the fact that this team is what they're 6-3 now, that's not acceptable for LCS guys. Like I know we're all enjoying the fact that, you know, the bottom of the league is 3-6 and Immortals and Shopify have had some like actually pretty decent games and are fun team to watch. You know, FlyQuest is on top 7-2, but the shakiness of this league, because even though FlyQuest is clearly the best team in this league, their bot lane still makes a lot of like hilarious mistakes. You know?
I mean, so I would say it's the same thing. It's the same thing that Thorin was saying about BDS. It's not a good sign when 100 Thieves is in second place. Like they should be like a fourth or a fifth place team in this league. If they're fourth or fifth, I'm completely okay with it. But it's just bad that they're at the top because they have such glaring weaknesses, which was the same problem with BDS. When BDS is at the top and they literally lose every single early game, it's like, guys, we should have some teams in the league that are good enough teams that when they have early leads, they can do the objective setups where you just go to the objective on time, you put down vision, you kill them when they walk in, you make a good decision about like when to start the objective. Like these should be things that are that your team can do. And if you look at even like bottom tier LPL and LCK teams, most of them know how to set up from ahead. The problem is that they just don't get in those positions.
I mean, the other thing is 100 Thieves just has no idea what their win conditions are. Like they literally will fight heralds that they don't need to fight just for funsies. And then they lose the fight and then find themselves in massive deficits. Like just guys, you don't have to take every fucking team fight. Just walk away. Sometimes just fucking leave. Like you do not have a player advantage. Like why are you fighting on the top side of the map right now?
Don't worry. Here we go. 100 Thieves and North American fans. It's my turn. Guys, think about how many 1v1s River has allowed Sniper to take and win. That's so fucking tight. And I think that the Sniper factor of tilting the other team has to be somehow calculated. Because the only 1v1 he lost was against Whippo. He's 1v1 every other top laner and won.
That's why people like 100 Thieves. But again, it's hard to have honest conversations because there is a lot to like about the Sniper River Quid core, right?
Yep.
But you just have to like, you know, what I would recommend is next time you guys watch a game, take your hand, turn it like this and place it over the mini map so you can only see from mid lane up. And then you'll have a great time watching 100 Thieves games because as long as we're not dealing with fucking Isla the Eyesore in the bot lane, like it's fine. As long as you're not looking at them being in other places on the map, right outside of the mid lane, like we're fine. So it is disappointing to see the fashion in which 100 Thieves goes to zero because you just have zero. Like this team would get absolutely mega stomped at the international level. And I didn't want to have a conversation, guys, this year about LCS where we're like, wow, Cloud9 sure is underperforming because the ceiling of Cloud9 is a competitive international team. Mm-hmm. Like the players on this roster should be able to at least hold their own versus some of the lower tier Asian teams that they might see at Worlds. And so that's what the disappointment for me is it's like if FlyQuest plays internationally, and Masu and Busio do the Masu and Busio whoopsies in the bot lane, like they just lose the game. They just lose the game. So I wanted a better version of Cloud9 because I wanted to have hope that there would be an option to have a good MSI performance. or a good Worlds performance, like a quarterfinal performance for NA at Worlds, not outside of the realm of possibilities with the players on this roster, but within the context of their actual performance this season, it is pretty disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're worried about Busio and Masu messing up in the bot lane. I mean, we have international experience, Huhi and FBI fucking up multiple bot lane dives that have led to, one of those was the 100 Thieves win. The other one was the Immortals win, I think. It is rusty for everyone. It is disappointing to see, but can I interest you in a summer split? Maybe they'll figure it out by summer split.
I'm hoping,
and as long,
man,
as they're blue shelling each other, it is entertaining.
All right. Here's the hope. I will give some hopium for LCS. Here's my hope now. FlyQuest goes to MSI. They get a bunch of good practices. It levels up Masu and Busio, even if they do kind of bomb out at MSI. So they come back and actually have a better performance at Worlds. And Cloud9 also somehow magically, without any coaches, manages to improve to the point where they are at least dangerous for Worlds. Or maybe they make a miracle playoff run, because they're definitely going to be, you know, top six. That seems very unlikely that they wouldn't at least be in playoffs for LCS. So there is hope. But I mean, if the teams that we're sending to MSI are reflective of the current standings, like FlyQuest, 100 Thieves, or like maybe Team Liquid, NA's going to have they are going to get giga clapped at MSI. Like, there's not, it's going to be really sad.
That's what happened in 2022. We didn't have a team that made it out. That was when it was in NA. That one hurt. The New York, remember that? The New York theater, and I got so pissed off because it was all Chinese fans. Yep. I was like, what the fuck is this? Might be another one here in Europe. Oh, geez.
At least
Dom,
we have G2.
Dom, weighing a little bit on, I think, that, I guess, I was going to say mediocrity, but I guess middle of the pack here for the LCS, and why this seems more palatable than what we're seeing in the middle pack watchability, I guess, of the LEC.
I mean, it's also just that the bottom teams are actually doing things. Like, they, like the old bottom teams in LCS would literally just do nothing and lose. So it would just be like, oh, it's like, and the thing that would make it so tough to watch is like the teams that were good in LCS wouldn't even close the game quickly. So you would have these like 35 minute games that are just so boring. And it's like, man, like, when is Immortals going to lose this game? When you look at like the bottom teams in LCS, they actually can mechanically outplay their opponents. And teams like Shopify Rebellion, they don't really go out like bitches. They don't go out not doing anything.
I love Shopify, dude. I fucking love Shopify.
Yeah, I mean, they go out fighting, and you know, they actually give themselves a chance to win. I mean, Immortals, you see outplays from their players. Like, Castle is actually 1v1 outplaying, like, you're getting a Korean versus Korean, like, 1v1, where they're actually outplaying each other and mind-gaming each other in the bot lane. That's what I want out of LCS, and I think the biggest thing about LCS is that the average mechanical level of the league is so much better than it was before, because of the players that have been brought up, and then also like these players that have been imported are just outperforming previous imports that we had. I mean, we used to have like last year we had to watch Harry the entire fucking year, pretty much, until APA came in at the end. We had to watch Harry the entire year, man. Like, we've had Ryoma in the league. Like, please, man, I don't want to watch Ryoma anymore. Like, we had King play for like a brief period of time. I mean, it was just, there was so many just mediocre players. I mean, we had
Hoon sitting on the bench.
I mean, we had a full year of like Blue. We had a full year of Ika. It's just, it was just so tough to watch. And like a player like Dove is significantly better than both those mid laners that I just mentioned. So that's my big thing, is I just feel like the average level of players in the LCS is just much higher than it was before. And yeah, honestly, maybe LEC, we should kick the bottom two teams. Let's make a petition right now to kick Rogue and Giant X out of the league. Ain't no one want to watch fucking Giant X and Rogue games. No one wants to watch that shit. Kick them both out. Make it an 8-team league. It'll be better.
Well,
free Larson, put him on one of the other teams. Like, cool. Now you got a little squad.
I think
Larson to Mad Lions. There you go.
Yeah.
To your point there, Dom, it is not about time, but just nice that we can finally give a shout out to scouting, getting it right in North America, and like, even with Shopify, B-Boy
got lucky.
Yeah, but you know, I'm calling it out.
I guess you're right. A track record of like 3 or 4 years of these kind of you named a lot of them imports that came in and didn't do well. But now like B-Boy coming in, everyone's like, Turtle played pretty good. Like maybe he should have stayed. And now B-Boy's like, okay, hold my beer. And now B-Boy's performing. That's pretty good. Like give him that quid. Showing up player of the week this week. And he's looking more and more confident. It is kind of coming through here.
Was it success of scouting Deegan, or was it the fact that players who are washed couldn't get the bag anymore in NA? And so the GMs aren't just getting washed players and handing them like $500,000 to $1 million contracts. So they actually did have to do scouting on players that were up and coming and who are willing to play for $75K a year. Which one is it?
A mixture of both. I don't. As soon as you started this argument, I was like, I don't want to hear the second half of this Monty with good scouting. Give props to the this year's GM.
Was this the first time they actually had to scout, as opposed to just being like, "Hey, this washed European, it's time to offer him $750,000 a year."
Well, okay. Well, go back to 100 Thieves. Joseph Jang taking control after Papa Smithy has moved on, right? Papa Smithy now at FlyQuest. You could see the way that roster was constructed compared to the way that
he signed Isla, so he's out with me, but sure, whatever.
Yeah, he stuck with Quid. He could have replaced the whole roster. He stuck with Quid. Immortals, Tonington took over last year.
Players, he had like double lifted Bjergsen in their final, both of their final like splits of their careers.
I think the, and even for Papa Smithy with last year's roster, I think the first year that you have it is always a little bit harder than the second year, right? So the first year you have it, I'm more willing to forgive than the second year, where you really get to see the methodology on how you want to mold these rosters. So Immortals molded around tactical with Tonington, who took over last year. Then this year, 100 Thieves. Let's see what else. Dignitas with Tomo. Like Frank has been okay. He's been good. Right. And they stuck around with Rich. They hit with Rich. They swapped other people out. Now they have Dove. So they're swapping things around. You're starting to see the growth in some GM roles that are starting to stick around for a little bit longer. And same thing with Papa Smithy. Right. This roster of FlyQuest working a lot better than the one that they did last year. So I think it's give it a couple of years and we'll see what happens. And then, you know, some of the teams that have kind of stuck around. So same thing with NRG. NRG, this is the first year that Jonathan Kamikaze Platypus no longer part of the team, and I think you're kind of stuck with like running it back again. They did roll with Huhi, and that made sense, but now you're going to see after this year what do they do, and that's really a tell of general manager kind of moves there. Anyways, yeah, looks like we're keeping LCS boys, which we kind of knew, but yep. Feels good to say that for once after years of being like, okay, this is just the copium take. Sure, whatever. Pass me my inhaler. That's fine. For our friends at home, including you European fans, let us know. Have you watched the other league in the West? I guess both the North American fans and the European fans. Have you watched the other league? More likely, if you're European, you've seen both, because that's where a lot of the North American viewership comes from. And which one would you?
What are you talking about? LCS viewership is up 4%, and it's definitely coming from North American fans and not from Europeans or Brazilians. Yeah, it's definitely not that. Actually, North American viewership is gone down, right? Yeah, that's the sweet lie that Riot is telling us right now.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Monty. Thank you for catching me, correcting me. All right. With that, it's time for us to announce our new friendship, partnership, sponsorship, Monty, with a new product for you guys out there. And it's one that all of us could use. It's a good old meal, thanks to our friends over at Factor. So Factor has a bunch of meals that you can heat up with restaurant quality in 2 minutes, wherever you are on the go. They have snacks, smoothies, and a whole bunch of different options for breakfast, midday bites, and more. And if you sign up now, using the code there, if you sign up now and save, it's even less expensive than takeout. So make sure to check out Factor. Our code for to help out Last Free Nation here on Power Spike is Power Spike 50. That's our code to get
50% off. So head on over to factormeals.com/powerspike50 and use the code powerspike50 to get, you guessed it, 50% off. That's the code powerspike50 at factormeals.com/powerspike50 to get 50% off your order. I have a friend. She is a on-the-go working woman, a writer for movies. And she's actually here visiting LA right now. I visited her in New York and she's like, I live by Factor. Otherwise, I wouldn't have time to cook and it tastes great. So I was like, yeah, that's awesome. We're working with something with them. And now we get to announce it today, Monty.
Yeah. And Dom, I know, is a giant Factor enthusiast. It keeps you alive, right, Dom, during your crazy stream schedule?
Yeah, I do. I do 12 meals a week. So I'm pretty much eating two Factor meals almost every single day. At this point. And yeah, I mean, they're just so easy. I mean, it's just 2 minutes in the microwave. You just have to puncture it, throw it in the microwave. I do it literally when I'm streaming sometimes, like during LEC. I'll just do it during a 3 minute ad. I'll play a 3 minute ad, 2 minutes of that. The Factor meal is like in the microwave, take it out, solid every single time. So I've got all the recommendations.
What are some of your favorites? I'm curious.
So like the every week ones. So they have a like, tomato ragu like with fusilli, so it's just like essentially like a bolognese. There's that. There's the Nona's bolognese, which is like another version of it. It has like sweet potatoes in it. So those are like two that I pretty much get. I get two of them every single week. The shredded chicken taco bowl is another one that I'm normally getting two of every week. I actually really like the like mushroom and chicken thighs one. There's like a chicken thigh mushroom with like a mushroom sauce that I thought I wouldn't like because I don't normally like mushrooms, but it's really well done, so that's like one of my favorite ones. What else? I get like there's like an Italian urban chicken one that I like. There's a smoked gouda one that I like a gouda chicken one that I like. What else? I'm trying to think. Like those are pretty solid. The other ones I like change up every week. Normally it's like a combination of it's a combination of just like there's a roasted garlic chicken that sometimes comes. There's a queso chicken one, which is pretty good as well. So like I've went through pretty much the full roster of them. But the first like five that I mentioned, those are solid. Like every single week I get like pretty much two of each.
Yep.
Yeah.
And one of the
I was back in the States right now because I would definitely be on this train as well. The HelloFresh and Factor, like the same company. So I was on with HelloFresh, but now like that I'm doing a lot of like streaming during the day, I definitely would be getting these just for lunch in particular.
Yeah. And one of the coolest parts is when you're setting up what kind of, meal strategy that you want to have, they have different, presets. So if you want keto, if you're vegan and veggie, for me, Protein Plus is probably the way, is the way I go. Because of how much I lift and really don't need a lot of like, you know, grainy carbs. I'm a big, protein guy. Make sure I have the double scoop of meat. That's for me. So, make sure to head on over to factormeals.com/powerspike50 and use the code powerspike50 to help us out here at Last Free Nation and get yourself 50% off your order. So thank you all. And thanks to our friends over at Factor. All right. Another sponsorship. Things are just going well. You know, they're going so well. Monty, maybe it's time for some predictions. Maybe we'll be able to see the future with our next one. It's one that you guys have asked for a little while. It's time for us to head on over to the big crystal ball of the guy that watches the most LOL esports in the world. It's time for Nostradamus. All right, Dom, what do you got for us this week in terms of our predictive powers?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this one is one that people are going to see coming, but I'm going to predict a G2 versus Fnatic El Clasico rematch in the finals, meaning Fnatic will win both of their series against Mad Lions and BDS. I know people are really high on the BDS train, but I think that in a best of five, if people are able to just figure out what they need to do against BDS, which is just ban out Adam or Nuk. That's all you need to do. It doesn't matter. Like, people are obsessed with this like Varus ban, this Vi ban. Don't do it. It's okay.
What are you talking about? Nuk has not played you know, only three champions throughout the entire season. He played just one game of Akali, and then champions. Everything else is Nico, Azir, Orianna. You don't have to ban it. You could just first pick. You can first pick one of them.
I mean, just ban out Nux champions first three, and then four or five bans, drop them on Adam. Because Adam's not going to be blind picking a lot of the champions that he's been playing. Like he's not going to pick his Darius or his Garen blind. He's going to use them as counter picks to your picks. So ban out Nuk first three, ban out Adam 4-5. Fnatic can win. So I'm going to say, I think Fnatic just straight up is better than Mad Lions. I think that if Oscar plays at all decently,
I don't know.
They should just win. They should just win straight up. And yeah, when it comes to the BDS series, I think Fnatic is going to win that as well. So Fnatic running the gauntlet, playing versus G2. That's what I'm predicting.
I mean, Oscar looked rough. He looked rough. I mean, people, one of the biggest comments in I think on the highlight video is like, hey, maybe we should swap Oscar with Irrelevant, because Irrelevant is running it against him right now. But you know, Nostradamus says, and it comes to life. Monty, what do you make of this?
I totally agree. I think that this is kind of the inevitability that is coming our way. Humanoid has just been too good. Like, I think the Humanoid and Razorc factor really make it for me. And I have been impressed with Noah's restraint recently compared to some of his other performances. Mm-hmm. He's looked like a more stable player, maybe not making the most aggressive flashes in that we've seen from him in the past. I think the roster, just player for player, is pretty superior. And like the mid lane diff in particular, I think is going to be quite profound in the next two matchups. And they did play a pretty clean game in the game they won in the previous matchup with G2. So probably I would say 3-1 G2 in the finals. I think Fnatic probably takes a game, but that's my prediction.
Again, just part of the LEC season just ending so quickly, because you have three splits, you got to get all the games in. We'll be crowning a champ next week.
Deegan, here's the thing, is that when you take the top teams in LEC, you know, the team that performed the second best and was international events, and then you dismantle them to make your fun little Spanish roster, it turns out we just end up with a really top heavy league. You know what I mean?
Especially when you when you spread the talent across like lesser teams. So now it's like Niski on one team that just like isn't a competitive team. Like you pair him with a rookie. Okay, well, where do we send like the other Vitality player or the other players? We send him to Vitality. I mean, Hilly is inting that roster, but once again, you're playing with Douglas, another rookie. It's just you put a bunch of the players that together were a strong team and just parse them into developing rosters. Like now you have Elioya in a roster that should be developing. You have this Vitality team, which a lot of players came from different places, so it's going to take a while for them to gel. But then also you have a rookie jungler. Same thing with SK. You know, you took people from, I mean, Niski joins. They have Isma, who could be a good jungler in the future. Right now, he has like a lot of rookie mistakes. It's just the talent is spread too thin in LEC. And the other problem with LEC for years has been that a lot of the players that are actually good in the region just don't get to compete. Like, we've just had year after year of, like, I mean, think about the quality of players that have been sitting out at the beginning of years. Like, we have Trimby sitting out right now. We have
Crowny.
We have Albadage sitting out. We have Crowny, who was a top AD carry during a period last split or last year. I mean, you have Limit, who was on a team that was in finals in summer. Like, you have so many players. And then you combine that with, like, think about previous years. I mean, Mickey X wasn't on a team at the start of 2022. Like, how fucking crazy is that? Mickey X is not on a team. Like, when he's the best support in Europe. I mean, you had Wonder sit out the majority of a year. You had Alfari sit out. Like, there's so many players that are top players in Europe that just do not play. And it used to be that, you know, some of the players that NA would get would be players on their way out. But now, I mean, you have Inspired playing here, Blippo playing here, just a lot of the players that would be top players in Europe just are not competing right now, and the rookies are just not good enough to compensate for the lack of talent that's lost.
I agree. Chad had to bring up something though, Monty, for you. You're pretty high on Humanoid. How's the Humanoid Razorc angry couple love duo going? Because it seems like all is forgiven. Couples therapy worked.
I don't know if I think they have the best synergy right now, but Humanoid's individual level has gotten up. And like, I don't really understand the lack of quirky within Western regions. And Humanoid's one of the only players that is willing to pull it out when it is so incredibly dominant, like especially in LCK, unless Zek is playing it, obviously. But the priority on the pick is enormous. And it's fun to see Humanoid kind of going for this pick because he's quite good at it. And I think it adds a pretty powerful arrow in the quiver of Fnatic. But I, you know, look, if we're being honest, like I think a lot of Humanoid's career over the past 2 years was a lack of motivation at the professional level because he did step up at times in playoffs or at international competition. But we haven't seen this consistent level of performance from Humanoid in a regular split in quite a long time. So that's been good to see.
All right. Well, there you have it. Again, our Nostradamus for the week. Fnatic makes the gauntlet run to losing to G2 there at the end. If you disagree or if you're a Mad Lions fan, let us know in the comments your feelings here. Again, we're on theme here. Sorry, Mad Lions Koi fans, but until it gets proven otherwise, this is where we're at. And this will probably be your best shot to do it because of all the synergy things that Dom brought up earlier in our discussion in Keeper Kick, with the team kind of being mostly together in years past or in last year. All right. Next up, it's that time. It's time to see how well we cashed in last week. And I'm still living off of 2 weeks ago, right? The Immortals pickup here was great for me, but not so much this week. Let's take a look on how we did with our picks from our friends over at Esports in the long shot. All right. Let's head on over to esportsbet.io. We could take a look at what we're going to do this week. But first, we got to go back last week, Monty.
Yeah, I mean, we got 2 out of 3. You guys hit on 2 out of 3 in our first week. 0 for 3. I mean, that's just how it's going to go with the long shot guys a lot of the time because we're going for really big parlays or estimates. So unfortunately, you know, a bunch of us picked the fact that we would have liked to have seen, you know, NRG upsetting Cloud9. Of course, that didn't happen. So it sunk us pretty badly overall. But there's time. There's time to redeem ourselves with some LCK and LEC predictions.
Yeah. Well, let's take a look at some of what we could do for this week, man. The Cloud9, okay. I really thought, and then Cloud9 lose afterwards 100 Thieves, but
All right. I've got an interesting LCK one this week that does, it does put you up above, it's almost at 4.5. And I'm going to do this, okay? So for LCK games only, I'm going to make a three-way parlay of Nongshim Red Force beating Breon because Breon are absolutely miserable right now. And so getting 1.7 odds on Nongshim, which have shown some glimmers through Call Me and Sylvie, feels pretty good. There's also, crazily enough, Gen G is at 1.5 odds as the favorite to beat Hanwha Life, which is like, how could I not pick Chovy to completely clap Zekka in this matchup? Like, that feels really strong. And I don't think you're going to get odds like this for Gen G again. So even if you're just picking Gen G to win outright, not doing my insane parlay that I'm about to do, I think that one's really good. And then the final one that I'd like to parlay is Kwangdong Freaks over FearX, because you're getting 1.65 odds on Kwangdong. This is a much better team. You may look at FearX's record and think, oh, like, aren't they a halfway decent team? No, they are not. They are significantly worse. Kwangdong is on the rise. Cuz is like in the MVP conversation right now for LCK. And the addition of Bull has seen Kwangdong now beat D Plus and KT. So getting almost 1.7 odds on this also is amazing. So those are my three-way. That's my three-way parlay. It's at 4.4 odds. So put 1,000 onto that. So it's Nongshim over Breon, Gen G over Hanwha, and Kwangdong over FearX. I feel pretty good about this one, guys. I feel pretty good about this.
I'm going to do one that is in the leagues that I watch. I am going to go for a TT win over RA. Even though, you know, I mean, RA hasn't won a game, but like TT, they're due. TT is going to win that. I'm going to go AL win versus OMG, which is pretty sketchy, but, you know, it will happen. And then WE over EDG. I'm just going to parlay all of those together.
All right. Repeat. AL over.
AL over OMG.
All right.
TT over RA.
All right. Wow. Really? All right.
I mean, RA is,
I like the Thundershock belief. That's fair. That's fair.
And WE over EDG. I might need to add something to this to make it more over five, but yeah.
Oh, it's all right. We'll take that. We'll take that for 1,000. Three-way parlays. Three-way parlays. Yep.
These odds are just kind of nuts. I mean, they're not wrong. There's no world where one of these bottom teams upends any of these teams. Like,
LCK, the bros, is very top heavy. I think that's the issue with LCK, is it's so top heavy that like there's not even a way you can rationalize some of these D-Gun. Like, you look at some of the odds and you're like, wow, Fear X is 13-1 against T1, but there literally is no way they win that game. Like, even as a flyer, it's kind of insane. Breon at 14-1 over HLE. Do you believe that Zekka is that bad, D-Gun?
I was looking at Nongshim over KT. What are the odds on Nongshim over KT?
We actually did take that on Competitive Edge. Nongshim is 4.3 over KT at 1.2. We actually did take a flyer on that one. That's the one that it's worth taking a flyer on, in my opinion.
I would consider that. Add that to my parlay. Make it like 75-1 odds for my parlay hitting. Fuck it.
Is that what it ends up being?
No, I don't know. It probably won't be that crazy.
All right, yeah, give me Nongshim. I don't know, man. Nongshim just frustrates me. That's the angering team there, because they could be good.
Sylvie's had some good games. Sylvie and Call Me have had some good games. Like, I don't think Nongshim.
Yes, but Call Me was supposed to be the next guy up, and he's so inconsistent. He's so inconsistent. Like, he's a worse Bulldog. Bulldog, at least, has been more consistent than not. So, I don't know, but I really want the Kwangdong Freaks like story to continue on. Bull and Bulldog have been great, but you're just worried there's a letdown here. And there's a DRX getting 3-1 odds here in that first series against them. And I'm just looking at it.
DRX's rookies are not going to beat Kwangdong.
Yeah, I feel poorly equipped for this. Just parlay what was it? Fnatic over Mad Lions, because that's what we've said is going to happen. It would be really troll if we do this whole show shitting on Mad Lions and then I pick Mad Lions to win.
I mean, the thing is, even if Mad Lions wins, it just means that Fnatic are shit. Like that's the whole problem that I have with LEC. It doesn't show, like, Mad Lions beating Vitality. I mean, literally go look at the end of how Vitality lost. When was the last time you saw that in a competitive game? They literally just four man pushed bot, and then Mad Lions just didn't base and the game ended. When have you ever seen that in competitive play? Like, a team just that's their tournament lives. Their split lives are on the line. They didn't even base to defend their Nexus. It wasn't like they were in some like hyper competitive base race or something like that. They were just like, yeah, whatever. I CBA basing. Fuck it. We're just not going to base. They just let the enemy team fucking end the game in front of them. It was such a weird fucking game.
Okay. I'm just going to do. Now I know how I feel. Let's just do a very long, safe parlay. I don't even know what we're going to end up at, right? Let's do it. All right. So we're going to do Fnatic over Mad Lions, right?
Yep.
And then let's do Kwangdong Freaks over DRX. Let's do Genji over KT.
Yes. Genji over HLE. Yes.
Let's do Genji over HLE.
Okay.
I'm writing it all down for us. And then let's finish off with Kwangdong Freaks over Fear X. What does that get? That probably gets us to like
I will do this real quick for you. And while I'm doing this, guys, we do actually have a promotion for you as well. So if you do go to the promotions tab on EsportsBet, you can go ahead and see that the Lunar New Year promotion is still going on. And what this means is if you deposit, whether you're a new user or a continuing user, $100 in USDT or its equivalent in another cryptocurrency, you get $100 USDT bonus, as well as 100,000 esports coins, and you get a $50 risk-free first bet after redeeming the promotion on any Tier 1 League of Legends match in the spring. So that's really fun for you guys coming back. It will say contact customer support when you click it, and they will explain to you how everything works for that promotion. So avail yourself of that right now. Avail yourself of that right now. It's a good thing. It's a good thing to do. I am currently calculating your insanity, Degon.
The 5-game parlay. Let's make it happen.
The 5-game. I'm doing it. We got two more to get in here for you, and we'll see exactly what your current odds are as they stand. And I need to get Fnatic versus Mad Lions for Fnatic. All right, there you go. With 1,000 on this.
What do we
Your got? Odds are, sadly, only 5.394 because you picked a bunch of favorites. But there you go. We'll do it.
All right, yeah. We'll do it for now.
We'll
I'm
do
still
it.
Living off Immortals. So we're still good. Thanks, Immortals. Scrimbucks, baby.
You cashed in on the Scrimbucks. I was very impressed.
On the broadcast, too. That was good. All right, that's a long shot. We'll check back on in next week to see how we did. Thanks to our friends over at EsportsBet. Last up, we touched on it a little bit earlier as we have really tackled a lot of LEC and LCS this week. But the best team in the West, I think all of us agree, is G2. And so we're asking the question in our Galaxy Brain Club, are G2 a world-class team? Let's discuss. They've been the top of the heap since they got their butt smacked by NRG. But since then, it's been pretty solid. Again, the irrelevant calls have been loud by, I guess, fans that are just not appreciating what Broken Blade has done for this squad. But I ask you guys, are they a world-class team? And if not, if they are, why? If not, what do they need to do to get there?
I think you have to ask the question is like, who are the world-class teams right now? Because once you get kind of beyond the top two in LCK and LPL currently, it becomes pretty muddy. Like the kind of, there's like the upper, the S tier teams in both LPL and LCK. And like, these are the BLG tops, Gen G's, T1s at the moment. And then there's a pretty, I would say, large gulf between those teams and the next rank of competitors. So to me, the question is like,
you think G2 would beat JDG in a best of five?
No.
I was going to say JDG.
No. But I think like when we get to the third or fourth teams within LCK, there start to be potential arguments. So probably this team is not top eight in the world, but are they top 10 or top 12? Like, that's where I think you can start to maybe have the conversation. It's also the level of competition that they're facing, but I think that G2's strengths are very good right now. I mean, you look at the way that they picked apart BDS's style in the draft, like foiling the pick compositions that BDS really liked to go after. They had answers, you know, with the depth of the champion pools of the players in the drafts. People will like kind of point to Broken Blade and say, well, on the international stage, isn't he kind of a liability? I would argue that that's what we said before MSI last year. And then at MSI, he turned out to be one of their best performers, right? He definitely was underperforming in the first half of 2023, but come international, like come MSI, he stepped up in a big way. So I would say we have seen decent international performances from him in the past, even when we haven't had the greatest level of confidence in him from his domestic performance. And factually, I mean, this team still has world-class players on it. Like, Caps has been doing well ever since he was struggling at the start of the split. He's ramped it up over time. Mickey X is still a great player. The champion pool is certainly in Hansama's wheelhouse right now, and Yike has developed really well as a jungler. So for me, like, I think there is an argument that they could, like, I mean, we made this argument last year too, but like, is this a world quarterfinals team? Probably, you know, probably.
This is the West's best chance at a world team to make it to the quarterfinals. It just, they just happened to run into the wrong.
What does that mean though with the world's format? Like, what does that mean with the world's format? Because like, world's quarterfinals is like, yeah, I mean, generally you're just going to get a Western team in quarterfinals based off how the draw will work.
I mean, yeah, this is, I mean, by that argument too, we could say, is this possibly a world semifinal team with the right draw? That's not impossible. I mean, Swiss sucks. So yeah, I mean, it can produce weird results.
And to that point, if we're talking semifinals, NRG got the best draw that they, like, when the draw happened, that was like, okay, cool. NRG got like not T1. Great. Right. That was like the whole thing. And they got blasted. So I do think that maybe a world semifinal team is a good conversation too.
I mean, yeah, I don't think any team in the West is making a world semis. And even if they do make a world semis, it won't be like
it'll be a fraudulent one for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I care about. Like, people will be like, oh, like this team, it's like when Mad Lions gets top four. It's like, Mad Lions did it. They got top four. It's like, yeah, in the weakest split of LEC in fucking history, they got top four. When it looks like you are literally going to have to put down half the old players in LEC. Like, it's like, all right, it's time to retire. Like, all the fucking, like, half the league. Like, nice. This is the split that they're doing well. I mean, I think G2, it's really hard to say where they're going to end up. I think the thing that makes me a little bit worried about them is they're way more inconsistent early game than they used to be. It felt like they were way stronger at early game in, like, previously, like in summer and spring last year. So maybe their mid to late game is better now, but I don't know, like, if they're going to be, you know, making good decisions early. I mean, even the series versus BDS, like, they had some pretty rough early games. The game number one, for example, they just take a fight that's just objectively losing. They all die, and they recover through good macro. But those are things that actually worry me, because I don't think that other teams internationally allow you to come back very well. So I normally like strong early game teams internationally. I think maybe they could be like the 10th best team in the world or like 12th best team in the world. But it's like, the thing that I always consider is like, does that even matter if they're top 10 or 12 right now? Because the whole problem that always happens throughout the year is that Asian teams get better over the course of the year. So when you get to Worlds, like, it feels like the teams are training and they're improving. And I think it's harder for G2 to improve because the rest of the league is not as good. So I don't know if like what their trajectory is going to look like compared to teams like JDG. Like, JDG look rough right now, but do we really think that this team is not going to be able to figure out like objective setups and macro later on?
But here's a counter argument for you, Dom. Like, I agree that the Chinese teams will probably get better. I don't really see that the Korean teams are going to get better that are kind of bad right now. Like, so Gen.G and T1 might get better. Kwangdong might get better. But outside of those three teams, do we believe that Hanwha is going to be a substantially different team later in this year? Really? Yeah. They still don't have any shot calling. I mean, that's the problem, is they didn't actually fix the issue of their shot calling that they had last year. And
yeah, I mean, I think that the players can grow into those roles. Like, I'm not sure about, like, obviously, like, I have no clue what Lucid's comms are like, but like, he seems like a good enough player where if he's able to just be more comfortable on stage, I could see them just being decent. I mean, Kellen aiming, who knows how that's going to turn out, but like, it feels like these rosters are solid enough that they can be decent. I mean, I would expect that by the end of the year, Dom1 will be a top four team.
I like your optimism.
Yeah.
I do not share your optimism for Dom1. I think KT is fraudulent.
They just have better rosters than other. I mean, I think KT is fraudulent, and I think that KDF, I mean, I would just assume that in a like pressure best of five, Showmaker is just gonna fucking cook KDF. Like, he would just win that same way in Gauntlet. Like, he kind of just manned up and just carried the fucking games. Like,
mid lane is definitely the weakness there. But I think, at least in LCK's case, I would not be as confident in making the argument that this is a region where the kind of like fourth through sixth place teams are going to, or even third. Like, I don't think Hanwha's going to get that much better either. Like, third through sixth place team are actually going to improve substantially. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just comes down to finding a style that works. But also, if you look at, like, Hanwha Life's roster, I mean, Peanut and Delight, like, they had very solid jungle support, like macro, warding, all this type of stuff when they were on Gen G together. And I just feel like they will be able to at least be good enough where if G2 has some of these, like, bad, like, if G2 plays bad, they'll just lose to these teams. That's my point. So it's like, it's really just a consistency argument. And how does G2, like, end up playing on the day, and do they have a good read of the meta? Because one of the advantages that G2 has is they're one of the most, like, brave teams, I guess, in terms of drafting things that they think are OP. They're very confident in their own analysis of the game. So if it's a patch where new things come out and people are questioning, is this really that strong? It feels like G2, they just play the game and, like, through scrims are like, no, this is actually what we think is, like, the most broken champions on the patch, and they'll be able to ride that. So I feel like if the meta is good, or if they have, like, a specific read and other people are just incorrect in their analysis of a patch, G2 could be better than them. But it just feels, like, very random. It feels very hard to predict because you don't know what the game's going to look like, and you don't know how much variance there is in the game. I think that in general, the bigger the patch, the better it'll be for G2. That's kind of how I view them.
To kind of get the surprise factor in, and we know how slow some teams can be towards adapting.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that they're the most willing to accept the game for what it is, where I think a lot of teams, they struggle with that. I mean, we've seen it pretty much, like, every single time that Ooters became meta. How long did it take for people to actually realize that it's OP? Like, people just view it as, like, there's no way Udyr is good. I mean, look at it. It's just fucking, it just walks around and auto attacks. How could that champion be good? Like, this is how people's mindset works. You know, if there's a champion that's changed and it's actually like Lissandra support is something that Mickey X was very willing to play. ADTF is broken right now. It is just objectively fucking broken. This shit is going to see nerfs. They just made ADTF broken for no reason. BB's willing to play it. Like, they're willing to play all these types of picks in different lanes, and I think that they're very open to the game being broken and abusing a broken game. So that's a huge advantage that G2 have, because a lot of times in League there are massively unbalanced OP things that fly under the radar for long periods of time, and because of the fact that it just doesn't sound right, like, people just can't imagine it being good, it takes people a while to adapt. So I think that this is one of the things that G2 could, I mean, this is one of the things that could make G2 a top, like, 8 team in the world, or maybe even, like, get into semifinals, is if they get a really good patch where there's a lot of stuff going on and they're able to adapt to it. The more standard the game, I think the worse for them.
Who is, and we could, you know, take it wherever after this, but who is the strongest player in their position in the world for this G2 roster? Because I think Caps is probably the best player, but mid lane is pretty
Mickey
stacked.
X, maybe.
Is it Mickey?
It's either Caps or Mickey X. I mean, I think Mickey X was very deservedly, you know, the MVP of LEC last year. So I would be tempted, relative to others at their position, I would be tempted to say Mickey X, actually.
Yeah. Well, why don't we try that down, up and down? Is, I guess, Yike the least, and then Mickey the most, and then what do you got in, like, two, three, four?
I think Hansama would probably be the weakest worldwide. Like,
yeah,
like,
because there's a lot of good AD carries right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of good AD carries, and then also think about, like, Hans off Kalista Draven and compare that to other AD carries around the world. I mean, off Kalista Draven, I would assume that people like Bull are just better. Like, they just look better mechanically than Hans. Like, Hans Varus was pretty sketchy for the most part. So it's either that or top lane. I mean, top lane, it's very hard to be better than the top tier. But then again, there's not that many really, really insane top laners in the world. Like, most regions have, like, 2 to 3 good top laners, and then there's a pretty big gap between them and everyone else. But Mickey X is probably just support, because support players just suck, right? Like, so he's probably just the best compared to
his
other
peers.
Support players. Yeah.
Yeah.
Support players just in general are like the weakest players on the team.
All right. Well, meta shift will help, obviously, as Dom has concluded. I think we'll see what happens here moving forward with this very dominant team that G2, again, as you said, Monty, this might be the conversation that we have moving forward. How can they get better when all the teams around them suck? And you can't get the practice until you go to international, but then you're too far behind. You're just basically playing catch up, get your ass beat by everybody except the LCS teams. So who knows?
Yeah, they'll have a nice little trip to China, you know, get improved, but then have an MSI hangover, start sucking at the, you know, the G2 arc is like have a mediocre MSI performance, have the hangover, start sucking at the start of the summer split, then just come back and win anyway. That's how it rolls.
Mad Lions Koi, you could do the funniest thing this weekend. Just throw this one out there. I mean, it'll be funny for y'all. It'll probably suck for us because it's just going to be nonstop messages. But I mean, they could do it. It could happen. Let's see. Who's the other? And BDS, right? BDS could add their name to the list of European champions. Otherwise, it's been that triumvirate of teams there in Europe. All right, y'all. That was an episode. The Lunar New Year episode special where the West won because the East did not play. There we go.
Yep.
It starts, the grind starts back up tonight. LCK kicks on off. LPL will be kicking off on Sunday, Dom. Is it Sunday?
Yeah, Sunday.
Sunday, so Monty will be catching y'all on his stream doing bangers only, right?
Yep.
I will be, yeah, I don't know what to do with myself this weekend. This feels like last year when LCS had weekends off and I could go out and, you know, maybe go to a bar and chat someone up and make some friends and go from there. But I don't know what to do with myself. Dom, what are you doing?
Oh, I'm still going to be grinding. I mean, I've got LEC, I've got LPL starting. Yeah, so I'm still grinding. And then I go to Europe next week. So in 9 days, I'll be in Europe.
Watch out, Europe solo queue start banning the Udyr. He's doing it now in NA. Yep.
Yeah, we're doing our challenger grind. See if we can get it before we go. Currently Grandmaster, so see how it goes.
Also, Smolder is very broken. It is very, yeah, very, very broken.
It's
right
so
now.
Stupid. I mean, it's, thank God they didn't hotfix buff it on day number one, because day number one, I literally tweeted out. You can go to my fucking Twitter, and I was like, this champion is probably broken. Don't hotfix buff it just because it has a 38% win rate on day number one. It's a champion that people will get better at, and it will eventually just be OP, because they do the same thing all the time when a champion has a bad win rate. They did it with Briar. They did it with Huey. They just like turbo buff it, and then it just ends up being absolutely ridiculous. It's just like the strongest champion for a while. So let's just not do that for once. And they didn't do it, and I think we're just due for Smolder nerfs. Like the win rate of it is already way too high for a champion. I mean, pretty much what it was day one, people figured out, people were like, oh, so I just literally win the game once I hit 225 stacks. So I just need to not die and get to 225 stacks, and the game just is won. As soon as people figure that out, the win rate went from like 38% to over 50.
That is literally all I do. I'm like, all right, mute all. You can say whatever the fuck you want to be. No, I'm not joining you in this 1v3 dragon attempt. Yes, you can go AFK. I don't care, because all we need is 225. That's my new favorite number.
Yeah. It's
Jesus.
All right. Monty, any final words before we close it off?
Nope. That's it.
All right, make sure to like and subscribe across all of our platforms here for Last Free Nation to get all your news in esports. Thank you so much for watching. We'll catch y'all next week for more Power Spike. See ya.